Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I am Sean.
This is episode 229 of this fine, established, almost five-year-old podcast. And I am
close to five, yeah.
Yeah, I am gloriously joined by Sean here, who is joining me on his birthday, one of the many workaholic days we've done on this podcast. But we've got you with three albums for you. We've got Come Home, The Kids Miss You by Jack Harlow. More on that later. We by Arcade Fire. More on that later. And Let It Be Blue by Chuck Chuck Chuck, a.k.a. three exclamation marks, a.k.a. Surprise Pikachu Face, a.k.a. more on that later. So we have some very...
I will forever call him Surprise Pikachu Face, even though I do like Chuck Chuck Chuck. That's just Audio Face. That's what I'm calling them from now on.
Absolutely. We've got a couple of singles. We've got a little bit of music news here. Mm-hmm. More Dave Chappelle than I ever expected to be in an Audio Face episode, but I was able to squeeze it in somehow because it's music related, actually. So we'll get to that. But first, I wanted to begin with, honestly, what is probably the biggest music release in the world right now, but we just didn't focus on it for, like, numerous reasons. But it's Callaita by Bad Bunny. It's off of his new project that he just released, Un Verano Sin Ti, that came out this week. It's one of those situations where, like, and also, let me just say, this year especially is just going to be, like, music overload for us, like, more so than any other time. We've got, like, backup to help us with all this, but there's a lot of music coming out here, so please be patient with us. We're going to try to review everything we can, and we are still trying to, like, branch out into international genres like we promised we would, and we've been doing that very well this year, but in situations like this where we can't, we'll at least shout out new singles. So Callaita by Bad Bunny is, like, one of those, like, throw it at the end kind of songs of the album where it's, like, the most popular one already, so it's easy to just, like, throw that at the end as a banger. It's pretty solid. I will say it definitely does the same thing that Sean complains about all the time, where it's that like typical templated like Latin beat, the dun 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 drums.
Yeah.
But I think it's fairly decent, and there's enough of a different flair within it that makes it unique enough, I think.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's fine. I mean, I'm... I don't mind Bad Bunny's work and stuff. It's just sometimes to me his albums can be really, really long. But I thought that track was fine. I definitely want to listen to it, and I will listen to this album. So especially with a Latin girlfriend, you know, it will happen.
Yeah, Un Verano Sin Ti is an hour 21 minutes long, so it's definitely one of those long ones. And but Bad Bunny, like we talked about also with like Rosalia, really like Latin music right now is, if you're a typical American consumer of music, it's very easy to miss like the Latin music trend that's happening right now. But a lot of the innovation and different things that are happening are in Latin music if you know where to find it, for example. Bad Bunny, I guess it's a little bit more on the pop side, but this is like a chiller song, really nice, and one of 22 other tracks that one can check out on Un Verano Sin Ti, which is out this week. What we also checked out this week is Dog Food by IDK featuring Denzel Curry. IDK released a sort of drop project called Simple. We call drops like mini projects, EPs almost, that fans of an artist will really definitely appreciate and remember. But most people will just go, oh, it's a nice little collection of songs here. It's a drop, really the best sense of the word. And Dog Food's a really great version of getting IDK and Denzel Curry, two very experimental rappers and very talented rappers, I think, really like playing things out in their own space kind of thing. Niggas never had a Thanksgiving, so instead of giving thanks, my niggas taking what's given. You know what it is, set the city on fire. Girl, free the titty if you don't wear a wire. When it comes to paper, that's the shit that I require. When it comes to power, that's the shit that I desire. For real. It's 11 o'clock on the dot, I'm on a block. Ain't no time for no sleeping, no yawning, no whatnot. 12 running around creeping and peeping for the drop. We be moving with caution, the block is really hot. The block is hot, the block is hot. What'd you think about it?
I liked it a lot, actually. I really think that Denzel Curry this year is, you know, as really coming, starting to shine into his own of, you know, not just being, you know, known for, you know, going hard and kind of being experimental, but doing a lot of that and a little bit more now. His album that we both really liked, But My Eyes See Your Future, is fantastic, and the single is really good too. So I like to see him collaborate with more and more people, and that's what I want for him to do, is to get with more people and to see kind of what that breeds into for him and everything. So yeah, it was good. I liked it a lot. I thought it was decent.
Yeah, this is definitely like the whole project overall, as kind of like Ghost co-producer Kyle noted, is a little bit understated, so to speak. It's almost like, I like the way he described it, sort of like IDK's Catronata pivot, because a lot of the songs are very electronically inspired in almost like Catronata way. It's not quite that, you know, I've been talking about for years in this podcast, I really want that perfect mix of EDM and rap in there. I still think Vince Staples is closer to getting to that mix than IDK is at this point. But I really love the instrumentals that are chosen there. I think the Paris to Southeast little interlude at the very end is really funny. It has this interlude about like being one of the first black pilots of Pan Am. I think you'd actually really love it, Sean. It's hilarious. It's like Soul Plane 2 as a rap interlude. But yeah,
I like
There's a pilot angle to love from it. It's like, it was a black angle love from it. It's really good. Anyways, those are our singles for the week. You can submit new singles to us by going to audioface@syndicate23.co. That's an email address. A lot of people think email is outdated and weird. That's totally fine. You can also reach out to us on social media. We're at audiofacepod on Twitter and Instagram. DM us and we will just take your single suggestions, your music suggestions, and we'll review them on this show right here, as you all like. Syndicate 23 members updates. Check out the Syndicate 23 Discord. It's discord.syndicate23.co, I believe, is the URL. That sounds like something I would do. And you can join our community. It's going to be a lot better than just like regular social media. We'll post things about new music. There will also be a really helpful understanding news and politics side of it for the Power Report people, if you know what that is. So check out the Syndicate 23 Discord. That's going to be cool. Check out the 2022 playlist. It's just going to be Untitled 2022 playlist, I guess, now. Now we're halfway through the year. And thank you, Peter, for mastering this episode, making it sound really nice. Also, courtesy of Discord, because I'm testing not using Skype for this episode.
I apologize, Peter, for having to deal with us every week.
Yeah, preemptive apologies. But I honestly think recording with Discord sounds a little bit better for the end user audience. But this will be the first episode we're trying that. But yeah.
We report, you decide.
Yeah, thank you, Peter, for taking all the curveballs that I throw at you every single week and still managing to make brilliant-sounding productions out of them. So if you are a musician or a podcaster who is looking for a similar kind of wonderful, magical treatment, check out Dead Music Productions, deadmusic666 on Insta.
Yeah.
Let's go into the big story in music more broadly. Definitely had to do with... like outside of music, and especially in U.S. news, the leaked Supreme Court, I guess, like opinion that seems to indicate what has been long expected, that Roe v. Wade, the American law that sort of enshrines the right for women and people who give birth to have abortions, is basically going to be overturned, essentially paving the way for abortions to be banned on a state-by-state level in the United States, definitely causing a lot of chaos and concern with people who are just planning to live financially sustainable lives. And back into the music world of things, I think, you know, a lot of artists gave different statements here or there, especially a lot of male artists who, like, let's be real, like, the folks who have the ability to give birth are much more affected in this. And so... Mm-hmm. I think my favorite statement out of all of the, you know, typical musician statements about politics, some of them being more inspired than others, is one where Phoebe Bridgers kind of spoke out, and she spoke out with a really personal story of hers that I'll share a quote from. It says, quote, "I had an abortion," quoting from Phoebe Bridgers, of course, "I had an abortion in October of last year while I was on tour. I went to Planned Parenthood where they gave me the abortion pill. It was easy. Everyone deserves that kind of access." And then she shares a list of places that people can donate to these are different organizations that are protecting women's access to abortion as it's under threat in a significant portion of the United States, at least half of the states, I believe. Mm-hmm. And definitely this is really good because, you know, like, it's the idea of reproductive justice and abortion is so clouded in morality, especially, and what people are able to do with their own bodies. I won't make this like too much of a thing, only to say that there's power port for that. Only to say that I do find it hypocritical that the political party that constantly talks about freedom of liberty and freedom of speech and rights to the person and the self are not all of a sudden, but very deliberately trying to control the liberty and the rights of women. It goes into a larger pattern of what they're actually doing versus their rhetoric. But again, there's power report for that. But I really appreciate that there are artists who are really putting their money where their mouth is. Phoebe Bridgers isn't not only just like posting about it, but she's going to be going on tour soon. And she's going to make a portion of her proceeds benefit different abortion charities. She said $1 of each ticket will go to the Mariposa Fund, which will work to provide abortions specifically for undocumented people who already face huge systemic barriers when trying to obtain safe reproductive health services. And this goes to the point that I'll let you jump in, Hassan, right here. But the last thing I'll say is that in this fight for reproductive health and reproductive justice, wealthy people of any race and stature, this isn't like a race thing, it's more like a class thing. Wealthy people will always be able to have access to abortions in this country. They'll be able to fly to California or New York or Pennsylvania or one like the blue states on the coast where that will still be allowed. But it's always going to be the poorest people who will be disproportionately minorities and people of color and very often undocumented, who the same people who are championing the rights of fetuses don't care about those babies once they're born. It's going to be those women who are going to be, or those people who are giving birth, who are going to be the most affected by this policy at the end of the day. They're the ones who are going to be facing the most danger from doing these like underground, like sort of abortions kind of deal. So, I'm really happy that Phoebe Bridgers is like really using her stature and her privilege to target directly where this bill is going to hurt people the worst.
Yeah.
And this is definitely one of those contenders for the Work Award, I'd say.
Yeah, it's good because I'm always saying live, you know, live your politics, you know, do, you know, if you say one thing, you got to show like that you really believe in it. And to see that from Phoebe is actually really cool. Heartbreaking to hear that she had an abortion last year and everything, but it's, you know, takes guts to talk about that. And it's, you know, saying, hey, this is my experience and other people should have the luxury and everything that I was afforded as well. So again, you know, live the way that you do, live the way that you want to do and everything. So that's something that I've always been privy to because, you know, we have so many different musicians and artists and stuff that will say one thing but mean another or not know what the hell they're talking about and all of that. But it's really nice to see that coming from her and a few other people, whatnot, naturally. But yeah, it's just stupid fucking backwards-ass country. But this isn't Power Report, so I'm not going to go on an eight-hour tangent because yeah, we got music we actually to talk about.
I did say we did do a really good Power Report clip at youtube.com/DanFromTheInternet. That was from several months ago where we had the Power Report panel with Caesar, Ben, and Yasmin Aliyah Khan, who has been on previous Power Report episodes. She's going to be on more in the future. We were talking about Texas's sort of like heartbeat bill that was used to trigger the Supreme Court, basically the Supreme Court decision. And so you can go back there. The reason I love and I plan Power Report so meticulously is because I want it to be one of the only news shows in existence that stands the test of time. Usually a news show is useless after the first week it's out, but yeah. Power Report, I love that the fact that, again, like patting my own back here, but I chose the topic specifically because I knew they would come up again in the near future and they would have relevance months and months going on. I specifically don't pick the flavor of the month kind of stories on Power Report. I pick the things I know will matter like months and years in the future. And so that's my little plug to make sure that you're checking out Power Report and all the other junky political news shows that are out there that are just feeding you nonsense and avoiding the center of the story.
Yeah.
But this is the music podcast. We move on to really no other like clean way to segue this, but Jack Harlow has released, I truthfully don't know if this is like his first album. I don't think this is his first album, but it's definitely like a really big effort because he has blown up in a number of different ways since his last album was released. But we have Come Home, The Kids Miss You by Jack Harlow. It is 15 songs, 45 minutes long. Sometimes the text is small on my other monitor, sorry. And yeah, like I said, Jack Harlow has really blown up as the this current generation's favorite white rapper, it seems. One of my favorite trolley posts was someone saying Jack Harlow is Gen Z Eminem, which is like, tap the brakes. You can tell that's deliberate trolling, and that's pretty good trolling, I will say, but like,
Big K.
Yeah, Big K. that's a Big K if I've ever heard one. I'll say before we jump in here that maybe there'll be a theme with this episode. I definitely, after doing listen number two, listen number three, liked it more on subsequent listens. And I definitely feel that Jack Harlow has potential to continue like growing and has like a definite ways to grow. I don't love every single part of this project. I find some parts of this project annoying and like damn cheesy, but other parts of this project that I think are like more, again, not perfect, but if I'm being honest with the things I've asked for from rap music for the past 5 years on Audioface, Jack Harlow is doing more of that than a lot of other artists that I see.
100%. So I'm much in agreement with you. After second listen, I don't mind this record. There's a lot. My big problem with it is just the lyrics and the bars are just really cheesy on some parts, and they're kind of whatever. I love the production work a lot on this record. I think that it's very clean. It's crisp, and for, you know, listening to Jack Harlow's earlier work and some other stuff, he's actually released a ton of music, but it's only really blown up the past about year and a half or so.
Shout out Lil Nas X, because that's definitely helped.
That's helped, and then a couple other tracks and stuff that he's done and been on.
He's gotten a co-sign from Kanye as well for like Nail Tech and a bunch of other things. So a lot of... and then there's, just talking on this album here, there's a Pharrell feature, you have a Drake feature, Justin Timberlake, Lil Wayne, and I just named the four features out of the 15 songs. So you're coming with a not very feature-heavy project from an extremely pop rap artist. So a lot of bold decisions here in this album effort.
Yeah, and I actually, I don't think he really needed he doesn't need the features, really. He's decent enough alone. Like, he has really good flow, I'll give him that. I like the way he raps, I like the way he sounds and everything. His lyrics, I really don't like. They're not convincing. They're just like, all right, you're going to be a fuckboy for 45 minutes. Cool, whatever. But again, as kind of going into like the musicality of it and the production work, it's good. It's every song, every track, I should say, has, you know, a purpose for being there. Everything flows together well. There's not one song, you know, that really sounds the same to another one on the record. There isn't one part where it's like drags on necessarily. And compare that to a lot of the other pop rap and pop trap stuff that we've been getting for a long time. The past, you know, 3-4 years now. It's nice that someone's doing a little bit something different with that. Something where, like, okay, hey, he's actually trying to do something over the production work. He's trying to do a little bit different with, you know, throwing in a lot of neo-pop in here, throwing in normal pop, throwing in trap, throwing in rap, just doing a bunch of stuff, kind of mixing it together and popping it in. And yeah, I mean, so kind of going into like the actual record, the first track is a little interlude, Talk of the Town. I thought actually it was really cheesy. It sounded like he was trying to be J. Cole, and I was like, please don't. I have my own quarrels with J. Cole. Some of his stuff I really like. Other times I'm like, eh, he sounds like he's trying to be J. Cole on that one. I was like, don't do that. Be you, Keen, be you. But like then, like you have Young Harleazy, Do Anything to Make You Smile, First Class. Some of those tracks, like, they're actually pretty decent. Hard drive full of heat seeking. Trying to come the same day as Jack rethinking. You don't need Givenchy, you need Jesus. Why do y'all sleep on me? I need reasons. I got Plex in the mail peak season. Shout out to my UPS workers, making sure I receive it. You could do it too, believe it. I've been a throw up the sex in a. Hey, it's post-production Dan here, and let me just say that First Class has a boomerang bumper ass beat. And I talked about this with one of my friends, shout out Andrew. And yeah, this sounds like one of the boomerang bumpers from Cartoon Network.
This is Boomerang from Cartoon Network.
It's all coming back to you. Okay, you got to be a particular like late millennial zoomer to understand that, so I'm just going to go back to the regular review now.
Like, I don't mind the way they sound. Like, they don't have the normal trap production work. There's a lot of experimentation in some of it for being a pop record in that way. But my biggest gripe is just the lyrics of it. Like, it's just, it's not very good or convincing. Yeah. So that's something he can grow on for sure.
Young Harleazy is just like a, like, dude, what? Like, adding Easy or Izzle on your words is like 2000 rap shit. Like, Snoop Dogg is 50 years old and is like writing that shit into the ground. Like, you've got to do something else. Like, even as a white rapper, you've got to do something else. And I don't mean to say like I put white rappers to a lower pedestal, because like Eminem, for example, who is like jokingly compared compared to a lot of different rappers, is like bar for bar better than like 75% of black rappers, right? If I talk about the fact like the lyrical and like story filled content that he can produce, I dare to say 90% better than most black rappers, right?
So very good. Yeah,
this isn't to say that like just the pigmentation in your skin automatically makes you a worse rapper or anything per se, right? But like Jack Harlow, this is not going to be that easy for you. I was talking to one of my other like musician friends for this, like, about this kind of dynamic, is that ultimately, to be a good rapper these days, you just can't be eaten up by your beats. There are a lot of rappers who just don't survive their own beats or the beats that are made for them, and yet these songs still get released. And we've talked about it here and there, honestly, like our proclivity for like trap music and how much that comes out versus how much is actually good has made it so this year we've only listened to like some of the better of the best, so to speak. So we haven't had many examples this year, but definitely in the past 2 years, we've had examples of just like trap artists who just like can't handle the beats they're rapping on, and somehow the song still gets released publicly.
Like, you know, you get your Playboi Carti's, your YBs. That's why I have the YB scale of is YB better, YB worse. YB definitely not better. YB's not even fucking close. But I jokingly make that scale though.
But like, there's lyrics like, I'm sure someone told him that like Dua Lipa, I want to do more with her than do a feature, is like a clever lyric, maybe. Girl, them Russian twists is working, I just put your button to it. All that talk, I'm cutting through it. I ain't no connoisseur, but I like this kind of store. I got nothing to do with who the fuck they think I'm screwing. 9 times out of 10, I had them, then I blew it, but I need some Dua Lipa. I'm trying to do more with her than do a feature. I check the web, they are chewing me up. Fuck it. Fade away, I left that Lucania. Bucket. I heard from someone you. But I'm sort of over these, like, rappers making songs about female rappers and how they want to bang them. Like, there was Doja by Snot, who I also kind of like Snot kind of much, but like I
track just for the, like, the beat is fantastic, but like, all right,
I feel like the trope is just like kind of annoying, and then like
super annoying.
I desperately just want to hear takes of like these rappers, like or Dua Lipa or Doja Cat, doing like response songs about like they would never sleep with these guys anyway. That would rock. I can't wait for that to come out on both their next respective albums. But ultimately, as you get through it, like I'd say, and I will be honest, so like Pharrell Williams, who I think did a phenomenal job co-producing the Pusha T record that we reviewed last week. I didn't necessarily love this like movie star flip that he did with Jack Harlow. I think it kind of felt kind of wrong. That being said, I felt like Churchill Downs was Jack Harlow really trying to be lyrical and storytelling, and Drake doing what Drake does best, honestly. Which is doing his best to meet whatever artist he's featuring with where they're at. And like we said, like we've talked about on this podcast, sometimes it comes off really unconvincing. Like when Drake is trying to meet the gangster of 21 Savage, just like, dude, I don't trust you.
So funny.
But when Drake and Jack Harlow are trading bars, spitting about like, you know, they're amazed that they're at this level in the game and they're just trying to achieve a higher and higher and higher, and they don't care about like the jealousy that is perceived by their peers. They're just going to keep going for it kind of in like a flaunting way. That feels like Drake in his element. That feels like Jack Harlow in his element. Together, they're great. Like, it's, I have plenty of Drake hate on this podcast in the record. I like this track. I think Churchill Downs is really great. Good. That's where Jack Harlow's doing his J. Cole kind of thing, and Drake meets it, and it kind of works really well.
Yeah, and I think that's where Drake is at his best, too, where, like, you know, you have Way Too Sexy, where it's when there's two versions of him that I like, and it's when he's not taking himself seriously, and when he, this is when he matches someone with them, but it's something that works in his persona. He's not going to be super hard. Like, I hate him when he partners up with 21, because 21 just overshadows him every time on those tracks to me. And he just sounds completely out of his element, but Churchill Downs I thought was actually a really good track. I would get along, but it's hard to crack jokes when you really want advice. I mean, what's it like to touch gold every time you touch a mic, touching heights, no one gets to touch in life. Fucking right, young bachelor, what's a wife? Once in a lifetime, till I say I want it twice. One of a kind, know your everything is one of mine. Wanted posters with my face, they know who I'm wanted by. So perfect on my eyes. Yeah. Yeah. Cold hearts and heated floors, no parental guidance, I just see divorce, therapy sessions. The production of it too was good. Both their flows together, very, very good. So I hope to I hope that they partner up in the future, and you know, to see hopefully Jack Harlow get featured on one of Drake's tracks or something as well, I think would be nice. To kind of see how he works with a Drake project or something as well. That I think would be really cool. But overall, like, Justin Timberlake was fine. Lil Wayne was okay. You also had, like, I think Snoop Dogg was in here somewhere, but isn't credited for a feature. Also, he had some samples and stuff that he used from Snoop Dogg, and you know, he used like Glamorous and a couple other features here or there. Samples that he used actually in a pretty clever way. So I think that he has a really high ceiling, is my thing for Jack Harlow. Like, there's a lot he can do. He just needs to, brushing up on the lyricism, really, like, if he wants to be, you know, truly someone who can really get up to the top, you can need to start, like, instead of just doing this fuckboy persona for 45 minutes, like, you gotta start talking about some other stuff. Like, if you really want to sound like J. Cole, like, J. Cole talks about a lot of deep stuff. As much as, you know, Not a Little Bitch J. Cole, we wanted to go on in on him for, there's a lot of good stuff he talks about and everything about growing up, you know, where he's from, the area, like, and all of the atrocities and stuff that you'll see growing up in a rough area and all of that. And it's the stuff of normal life and what people can relate to. But if it's just saying, you know, I want to write an album about my side piece, you're like, okay, go ahead, sure. It's like, yeah. that's my biggest disappointment in that. But again, it's nice to hear someone actually care about the production work and care about what it sounds like. So just
with all these things, all your points are totally valid. You also get songs like Nail Tech at the end, which we did as a new singles feature, which a lot of people have heard, which is like a massively popular song. And it's truly like, it's definitely pop trap for sure. But combining the trumpets, combining like the kind of techno inspired beat with how you're switching the productions and the drums and normal trap flow, it's really solid stuff. I think Jack Harlow can be one of those artists, kind of like Billie Eilish, who brings really alternative sounds into the pop space. I just definitely want to see more lyrical improvement and willingness to dip more into that subject matter, which Jack Harlow already does pretty decently well. I think it's definitely going to be a minefield as, like, you know, like a white rapper to dig into some of this deeper subject matter and, like, not feel, you know, like he's like culture vulturing or like not truly understanding like the subject matter. But
talk about your own experiences, mate. Talk about your own things, your own opinions and all of that. Have at it.
Yeah, or bring on another artist who can bring on that context and talk about those experiences. Yeah. Like, again,
Pusha T, see what happens.
yes, Pusha T, for example. But, like, LP, I think, does a really good job of complimenting Killer Mike in his lyrics and not sounding like a white savior in his lyrics.
I think LP is
the gold standard example on that. And I think Jack Harlow, on, of course, a much more younger mainstream level, can follow in that path if he does it the right way.
Think of it like Yankee and the Brave is like a perfect example of it.
Yeah. Or in Just, Look at All These Slaves.
Oh, Just. Yeah. Dollar.
His backup lyric is perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. You also had lead singer of Rage Against the Machine on there, too. So it's like, you can do a lot. Doesn't matter about your race. But yeah, again, he's also young. He's, I think, 23, 24. So, you know, he has a really high ceiling.
Absolutely. Arbitrary scale this week. I picked a really good one because it's Sean's birthday.
I know, I love this
arbitrary
shit.
Scales. We do arbitrary scales every single week on Audio Face because our review is our review. We said a lot of pretty good shit in that review. And if we watered it down by giving it a ranking scale, either like a letter grade or a number grade,
we'd become pitchfork. Be worth it.
Yeah, exactly. So instead, we are going to give you the hardest to keep track of, most ridiculous rating scales. This week is going to be ships in the John this is going to be naval ships in the John Lewis class replenishment oiler system. And so basically what that means is that the US Navy has a bunch of ships that are named after like liberal heroes in politics, which is hilarious because it's exactly that meme of like Republicans having like drones and there's like shooting down rockets and liberals having the same drone shooting down rockets with a pride flag on it. This is literally that meme, but this is really happening. So they're
they're like the B-52 bombing people, and then it says bombing where it's like LGBTQ and then like the
like Black Lives Matter bombing.
Black Lives Matter. So yeah, exactly.
It's like you're missing the entire point of like what leftist politics should be. It's not just like putting social justice like symbols over American imperialism. It's an actual change of the system. But let me stop myself. That's Power Report. This is an arbitrary scale.
Known African freedom fighter Nancy Pelosi kneeling down.
Wakanda forever, Nancy Pelosi. So anyways, this album, I'm going to give this the USNS Harvey Milk.
God damn it, I want to do Harvey Milk too, fucker. All right, it deserves a Harvey Milk. I could see it being a Harvey Milk.
Yeah, the USNS Harvey Milk christened on the 6th of November, 2021. Named after a San Francisco gay rights activist who was assassinated. But...
Yep.
What? So in honor of this gay rights activist, we're gonna fuel up a bunch of ships to kill some fuckers. Yep. Oh my... Yep. This country... Rocks in every wrong way.
It's fucking
possible.
Awesome. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah. And we mean that ironically. We don't like American imperialism here, but it's just like the levels it goes to are insane. You can help grow Audio Face by following Audio Face Pod on Twitter or Instagram. Check us out on youtube.com/audiofacepod. A lot of our reviews are blowing up, and we really appreciate your comments, your likes. That's literally what helps it blow up. So please continue doing that. Hit follow on Spotify, subscribe on other apps, rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. All that stuff really helps, and it's helping us. Y'all have been doing it, and we really appreciate it because it's growing the show, and we're seeing those numbers really happen, especially these past couple months. So keep it up. It really helps us out. Also, remember, you can become a member at join.syndicate23.com. Join.syndicate23.co. Jesus Christ, don't enter in.com. I cannot guarantee what happens to you if you enter in.com. Join.syndicate23.co. And you can get Syndicate 23 membership. That's going to be super fun. You get tons of bonus content. And recently on Power Report at youtube.com/DanFromTheInternet, the political show we keep trying to not talk about here, there was that reproductive rights throwback that we did from an earlier episode back from the fall of last year. Elon Musk's Twitter takeover, I have some special opinions about that. And then Democrats losing the war on weed. That's one of those Power Report stories where I like to keep track of it because no one in the mainstream media is actually talking about it. Very few people and even independent media are even talking about the story, and it's really important. So check out youtube.com/DanFromTheInternet. And yeah, we makes content out here at Syndicate 23, and we're only going to make more. Anyways, I want to include this because it'll include some interesting programming notes, but also because it's about Kung Fu Kenny, and it's also about something we've talked about a lot on... Ain't nobody praying for me! Let's get this shit. I love those two, like, what happens on Earth stays on Earth! Top of the morning, top of the morning, top of the... It's such a juxtaposition.
We're not the Wayans.
I was with you telling that story when I was with Riley, and like we mm-hmm. had to, for other reasons, like leave the Coachella night one early, but I had to see Baby Keem, and I was like, hold on, Riley, hold on, before we leave, we're not the Wayans.
Before Range Brothers out the roof.
But anyways, so we've talked very much on this podcast, the 5 years we've been doing this podcast almost, about double albums, what's the best way to do them, what's the best way to present to fans a work of art that is very outside the traditional scope of an album, a traditional album context. And Kendrick Lamar appears to be teasing that he's going to be doing his own effort at this. So we know that Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers will be his album project type deal, many years in the making. It's been at least 5 years since Damn came out, his last major blockbuster project, really solidifying him as the best, if not one of the best rappers in the game right now. But we see this photo of him, and he really does not post many photos on the internet, let alone the social media. And he has a book titled Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers by Kendrick Lamar. So that's the name of the album. But there's two CDs. One's called Morale, and one is called Steppers. They say master copy on each of them. This seems to hint that Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers is a double album. And hello, darkness, my old friend, Sean. We've talked a lot about double albums on this podcast, and I think that honestly, in a narrative kind of sense of the Audio Phase podcast, I think Kendrick Lamar's double album is going to be like a boss battle for us in really testing what we think about double albums, because we've talked about double albums in the context of, basically, we've said that over the 5 years of doing this podcast, they're overall bad for fans, but we've seen different types of double albums being released, from the trap type of double album where you release the album, you release the double album next week afterwards to build up on the momentum. That's good from a sales kind of sense, but again, not great for fans. You could just pump out the double album all at once, like the 1975, release a 1 hour and 40 minute complete mess where like a lot of the songs are great and it grows on you, but it's just so overwhelming that it sort of loses in the attention economy. You really get one, maybe two chances in a short amount of time to make your album into a hit, and when you overwhelm people like that, it usually blunders. There's also some like middle ground options, like Foles released a double album in two parts in two different parts of the year, so they're able to spread out that attention and maybe like chop it up a little bit. Maybe they would have had more push from it if they did it all at once, but I think by spreading that out, by making the Foles conversation, so to speak, happen at two different points in the year and still bring it into a fuller project, I think that's a cool idea. We're about to talk about, or maybe this video has already been released on the Audio Phase podcast channel at the time you're watching this, about Arcade Fire and how they put movements and like orchestral movements into a record recently and made that into essentially a normal sized album for 2022. So there's a ton of 100%. Different ways to project depth and work into a double album. But I think another dynamic here, I'm sorry to be so long-winded, Sean, but also welcome to this podcast. I've been doing this 230 episodes. But my last point is that, like, I think certain artists have earned the right to be able to, because they've illustrated in the past their storytelling abilities, their ability to work within an album and give us really a lot of work within an album, they've earned the ability to, for us to give them at least a little bit of benefit of the doubt when they do a really ambitious project such as a double album. I would put Kendrick Lamar as one of those artists.
Yeah, and also depends on the size of the double album, because sometimes I don't realize that albums are double albums. Like, one of M83's albums is a double album. Like, wait, what? I didn't realize that. So it just depends in the context of it as well. Sometimes it'll be that, but it, you know, it'll still be like an hour long or something. But if you do hour 45 long double album, then I'm like,
I'm saying like each album could be like, each half of the album could be 25 minutes, because we've had a couple of those here and there, and that's
exactly, and if that's the case, that's fine. Then it's like, you know, that then it's two, an album split in half the way I describe it. But there are ways of doing a double album correctly and the ways of doing a double album incorrectly, and that's something that I'll touch on more whenever we get to talk about Kendrick and stuff together, because next week's gonna be a shit show.
Sean and I are human beings with lives, and so that is just a statement. And so over the next month and a half or so, just like out of our lives, we're just going to be taking vacations from doing this 5-year podcast otherwise, like straight through, with like a few breaks here and there. Well-deserved vacations. We'll still be listening to music though, and so the unfortunate thing is that like Inside Baseball, this podcast, musicians only tell us they're releasing albums like a week or two before it happens. Sometimes you get these album rollouts, and like the literal disaster scenario is happening next week, where three of the biggest albums of not just the year, but years are coming out in one weekend, and Sean and I are both completely gone. Like, no ability to record from our rooms, barely any ability to record from remotely. So here's what we're doing. Next week, from when we're releasing this episode, we're going to have Kendrick Lamar's Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers. We're going to have a new album from the Black Keys. We're going to have an album from The Smile, which is the dual project, but with Radiohead's members Tom York and Johnny Greenwood, along with a number of others. And those are definitely going to be our three albums. Sean and I are going to be doing those remotely, and so we're going to do individual first reaction reviews once we listen to the album for like the first time or so, and then we'll post those individual to the Audioface YouTube channel so you can kind of get our opinions of those, our first reactions, our first thoughts. And then when we come back, that episode will be the week of May 23rd. We're going to be back together in our like usual kind of format kind of deal, sitting in our usual space like this. We will talk about our reviews of those albums together, kind of banter back and forth like we usually do, in addition to what else is happening. A similar thing is going to happen in the first half of June, where I'm going to be traveling again semi on my own vacation, semi on Audioface assignment, to go to Primavera Sound and check out that music festival and do some bonus member content for Syndicate 23 members there. I'm also going to, sorry for the third time, Sean, see The Smile live for one of the first times, and see another Gorillaz performance, so I'll be talking about that as well. And so there are also some very big releases, including some releases that are like very specific Dan targeted releases. Shout out to you, Hercules and Love Affair. God damn you. But the first 2 weeks of June, there won't be a lot of like Audioface podcast content, but we'll release what we can on the YouTube channel. I may dip into the members content a little bit and unlock some special things for y'all because I like you. And when we come back to general Audioface, which should be back to normal by late June, early July, definitely by July, then yeah, we will definitely do like a big ass music recommendations episode, because we will have had half a year of music recommendations that we haven't shared with you. And we might do definitely what we're going to do for episode 230, which will be the next episode, which will have Kendrick Lamar, The Smile, and Black Keys. That's also our 5-year anniversary episode. So I think that's just going to be a bonanza where we're just like, fuck the news. We're just going to do nothing but music the entire time. And it's going to be a blast, because it's going to be some of the best artists we've reviewed over the past 5 years. And some of, honestly, our favorite artists of life, generally. So that's going to be great. Again, thank you very much for supporting Audioface over whatever duration of time over the past 5 years. You've supported us through the highs, through the lows, through the legally redacted, through all of that situations, and like everything we and like everything we've done, and so
through all, like, another little bitch nominees.
Yes. And we'll continue to do like great episodes of Audioface. It just might be a little quiet here and there because Sean is a human being with a life, and I am a human being who has a life sometimes, and we'll be doing that. But yeah, definitely check us out. Make sure you're subscribed to at Audioface Pod on Twitter and Instagram, youtube.com/Audioface Pod, and wherever you listen to podcasts, so you keep track of all those things. There may be some delays, but they will be coming. And now, as always, we make these episodes way too long. Let's go into We by Arcade Fire.
Let's do it.
I am pulling up very shortly. We by Arcade Fire is an album that they just released. It's 10 songs, 40 minutes long, and our very strong opinions about former noted little bitch Wynn Butler and his former bandmate brother aside, Arcade Fire have been one of the defining alternative acts of a generation, definitely since the 2000s. 100%. And increasingly, they have made their projects more ambitious, more like ideal. Definitely. Still one of my favorite albums to this day, Reflector, just kind of shows how like
so good
they wanted to try to transcend just being an alternative record. And they released one of the best alternative records of the 2010s.
And then they Reflector and the Suburbs, and you have really good stuff that they've done for, you know, 15 years.
Yeah. they followed that up with Everything Now, which was their previous last album. You had some features with from Daft Punk, or some production from Daft Punk rather. Mm. And they did a really good job of what Arcade Fire has done a really good job of, if sometimes coming off as cheesy in this effort, is that they've captured the zeitgeist of a time period and all of the anxieties that surround that time period, especially living in the United States. And so Everything Now was a lot about this. And you can see this through the track names like Good Goddamn, Creature Comfort, Everything Now, Infinite Content. This time of being overwhelmed by the internet and all of its forces and all the stuff that's happening. Not necessarily touching on the political turmoil of the Donald Trump administration, but definitely having that as a backdrop and all of its effects having it. And I mention that only to say that, like, honestly, even though we come off as like really like left like political people on this podcast, we don't love when musicians like hit you over the head in a stupid way about politics. It has to be really subtle. It has to be kind of like crafted carefully.
And unless you're No Name. Kind of,
unless you're No Name, which totally works out. But here with you get a project that is orchestral, essentially. You get a project that, you know, all the songs are marked as like act one or like act two or end of the empire 1-3, which are like definitely on the nose there. And what you get are some pretty solid pieces. And what I really like about this is that it's a very ambitious, I'm doing orchestral parts. It's going to be acts within these songs. They're going to split apart to, you know, become like popularly accessible, but you still have a 40-minute album. This is still very logical in 2022. The songs that are like the most accessible movements within them are broken apart, like Age of Anxiety 2 or End of Empire 4 or Lightning 2. Like, those are the like the big songs that are really parts of it, but you have the labels there, which kind of accentuates what we talk about in the most obvious way possible, that albums should flow together, right? Here you have everything titled and numbered, so it's like very obvious that like this is the type of album that you should listen to front to back and maybe not shuffle through. But Arcade Fire has been pretty good about doing this and laying albums out even before you had to label them and put them into movements. This just takes it to a whole new level of like Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody, or Radiohead, Paranoid Android levels of thoughtful contemporary music production that, like, you gotta give him praise for.
First thing I'll say, do you know who did the production of this album?
No.
One, Nigel Godrich.
Oh, yes. I actually do remember that because we noted that in the new single when we reviewed. Mm-hmm. It was either, I think it was Lightning 1 and 2 that came out as a single, and so we kind of poured it into there. And so a little bit of that Radiohead touch there. I'll say this also to like defend my good friend Sean. When he says that Radiohead is one of the best bands ever, he's not capping. It's because their influence, when it sort of like ties into other bands, it's a night and day difference. It's a night and day difference at how high level it is and how smart it is, but still how approachable all of these high level music ideas are. That's the Radiohead touch. That's the Radiohead difference right there. That's what makes them transcend a lot of different bands.
So going into this record, you know, you have a Lightning 1, Lightning 2, which I listened to when it released because I was very interested to see what a Nigel Godrich sound Arcade Fire record would sound like. I'm like, I have no fucking clue. And Lightning 1, Lightning 2, just by themselves before getting the full release, I was like, okay, this has some promise to it, but I'm going to make my final judgments into it. But I was, you know, kind of left teeter-tarting because Everything Now, honestly, I really didn't like that much. I thought some tracks were good here or there, but honestly, it was not very convincing for a record.
And I'm really fascinated. It didn't even grow on you. I'm not like challenging you on this, but didn't grow on you?
No, I tried a lot. Like, and I mean, it was played all the time on the radio here. Like, I don't mind the title track of Everything Now. I really like the production work of it, but just there was so much to it that I just did not enjoy. And it was just a lot of things that were too on the nose and too just in your face with it, and I really didn't like it. I tried hard, because I do enjoy Arcade Fire a lot. But I think We is such a good album from them, such a good comeback record. They took their time, because Everything Now was in 2017. It was one of the very first albums we reviewed on Audioface, you know, 5 years ago, which is insane to say. But they took their time. They've done some other things here or there. They did that like soundtrack thing and some other things that they've done for different soundtracks and other stuff. One less butler on one butlerless brother, which is interesting, but more on that later because we have our something I'll talk about with that. But this album starts out so well with Age of Anxiety 1 and 2 / Rabbit Hole, because it really convinces me that for a band that has been together for so long, they are still creative artists. They still have stuff in them that can be out and is, you know, pertinent to being in this genre, pertinent to being in this awkward era right now of indie / alternative rock / electronica, everything. Like, there's this whole little thing of you have newer artists doing it, which, you know, I've gone on many tangents, many rants about it already this year. And then you have older artists who some are doing really well and some are not doing so well with it. And this is such a good return to form. The first, like, opening track, Angel Anxiety 1. It gets that little orchestral flair, but with also with synths and everything. And it's like it slowly builds up and then gets to that nice beat towards the end of it and everything. And gets you feeling, oh, wow, okay, Wynn Butler actually sounds really good on this. And the whole band, the synths, the drums, everything, it sounds cohesive. It sounds great. I'm like, okay, interesting. What is Angel of Anxiety 2? Totally different. Totally completely different. It's like you're almost bringing back like synth sounds and stuff you might have heard in the early 2010s, but putting on a flair of it of, you know, 2020s sounding indie / alt rock alternative that you'll hear nowadays. So it's like this nice throwback in a way to even just 10 years ago, which is crazy to sound, but it's, you know, like some of my favorite sounding stuff in the early 2010s, but they still make it to where it's, you know, modern and still experimental enough to be different. End of the Empire 1 through 3, and then End of Empire 4, Sagittarius. Great, too. Yeah, Sagittarius.
I'll just jump in here again really fast. I want you to kind of lead this review because I've talked way too much this podcast already. But Arcade Fire is one of the bands that we kind of like a little bit more, so I'm going to kind of nitpick a little bit more. Some of the Arcade Fire lyrics really toe that line of relevant and cringe.
Like, oh, yeah, you always get that with Arcade
Fire. Yeah, you always have gotten that. Like, and always then, like, maybe that's a good thing. Like, when Butler's crooning, I unsubscribed. like, all that kind of, like, really on the nose, like, really zoomer, like, millennial shit is, on the one hand, kind of, like, it still feels like an older dude pandering to a generation he doesn't quite understand, and yet there is not really quite a band like Arcade Fire, very few bands like Arcade Fire, I'll say, that are able to capture a zeitgeist consistently, so repeatedly, and really create time, really turn their albums into time capsules of a broader cultural experience of these things, of this sort of, like, repulsion to social media, of this, like, conversion of social media that's like taking over of it in this like darker force, and the natural human reaction of people to pull back from that and want to separate themselves from that kind of dynamic. I think the delivery of it and the landing of it is super cheesy at times. However, like Arcade Fire is really the only kind of band, or one of the few kind of bands, like I say, that's really trying hard on the alternative mainstream level to capture that. And I appreciate them trying, even if it's a little bit clunky sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's something I was going to get to, is their lyrics are still not my favorite, but it's definitely way better than Everything Now. Honestly, with the previous record, I thought that they were starting to lose their touch. They were losing their edge, one would say. And like, you know, sometimes that happens with older artists. I mean, you get that, you know, when you make music for 20 years, sometimes you can grow with music like Radiohead, or you can grow out of it like a bunch of different bands, like Smashing Pumpkins. You might get a couple of tracks here or there that are okay, but mostly just it's really irrelevant, and it's not anything that is really going to help, you know, the alternative rock scene and whatnot. But with this is the year of returning to form, especially from a shit ton of older groups. And to me, this is, you know, prime Arcade Fire. I really wanted to go into this hating it with all my guts, because I like to do that now because it's audio phase, but I'm blown away, honestly, with what they made. Lightning One...
I'm sorry, yeah. I just can't say, like, I think you're kind of going into this, so I can't, sorry to cut you off, but, like, the one feature on this is incredible. Race and Religion, Unconditional 2, with Peter Gabriel, who has been out there for a minute and a half.
Unbelievable.
What a track. Such a good track. Yeah. I mean, yeah, like, again, like, kind of subtract the deeper meanings of, like, race and religion being put into a song in this context as, like, a let's pretend PowerPoint doesn't exist for a while. It's a really good track.
Yeah, and, you know, going off to what I earlier alluded to of me, like, the Lightning 1 and 2 not knowing what it's going to sound like, it's perfect for this record. Like, the way everything is placed, it is great. I really like the way that they have it. Like, having the Lightning 1, Lightning 2, and then Unconditional 1, Unconditional 2, fantastic. Everything flows well. My one gripe is you really have to listen to this top to bottom. It flows like a record, which I do like a lot, but I do sometimes like it if you can shuffle it. When you shuffle it, sometimes it goes together, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it gets a little too slow, sometimes it gets actually a little too fast. So it's interesting in that way. But when you just play it straight through, you know, how God intended it, fantastic. I am very, very much blown away. This is one of my favorite records of the year so far. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very good. I'll also say I like it more and more with every single listen. I didn't hate it on the first listen, but I was definitely sort of like, it was one of those almost like a Sufjan Stevens, this is a lot, and I don't know if I like this version of a lot for an album. But unlike Sufjan Stevens, on listen two, listen three, it makes a lot more sense. It clicks in a lot better for me. And I really appreciate like the depth and care that Nigel Godrich is producing and all the other producers on the team and everyone else in Arcade Fire did to put like classical music kind of movement, something where we talked about classical music being important into modern music in the very early episodes of Audio Face, like putting those into a more mainstream approachable alternative pop kind of record and giving it some good political meaning, giving it some good like cultural significance. Really, this is the kind of album where like I don't feel like I'm doing great justice to it, giving it a review 3 days after listening to it, because my opinion of it is going to grow in the coming weeks, months, years. Like one of those Arctic Monkeys Tranquility Base situations. So it's a really solid album. I'm not quite ready to say it's going to be one of my like album of the year contenders, but it's definitely top of mind.
I don't, because there's just so much this year, but it's one of my favorite, like, favorite ones that I've listened to this year for sure. But album of the year contenders, I don't even start making up that list until like early fall, honestly, because there's just so much.
Yeah, we're almost halfway through a blockbuster year though, so we should definitely start getting ready.
Yeah. Arbitrary Scale. Arbitrary Scale. This week we always do Arbitrary Scales every review because normal rating scales do not matter and they're bullshit because Pitchfork. Just thank me later. This Arbitrary Scale is John Lewis, Class or Punishment, Oiler Tankers for the U.S. Navy. Because the U.S. Navy. Navy. I have a really, really funny pilot story, by the way, of someone who's Navy. Please remind me to tell you after this recording.
Yeah, this will be, for folks who don't know, we always put very often put Easter eggs at the very, very, very end of the podcast after the music. So sometimes just listen to the very end when the music trails off, and sometimes there's a hint as to when it's going to happen. And I'm an editor, so like I always do the hint in a certain way as to when there's going to be a cool code open. This might have to be one of those. But yeah, more on that later. Oh,
it definitely is. It's hilarious because I heard it happen. So this is... Oh, shit. This is a Robert F. Kennedy.
That's a good one. I was either going
to... Damn, they don't make it like this anymore.
Either, Bob Kennedy or Thurgood Marshall. I give this the Thurgood Marshall.
Thurgood Marshall.
The USNS Thurgood Marshall.
That's rough.
When I die, I want to be named after a Navy tank.
Oh, Lord.
Okay.
So real quick, since we're still kind of, you know, on the Arcade Fire-ness, so you know, we kind of alluded to Will Butler leaving, which is Wynn Butler's brother of the band. More or less, it was because Will Butler has three kids and he can't take them touring and everything. And Wynn Butler did this on an interview, by the way, of like say, opening up about it. Is I think Wynn Butler
gave
has
an exclusive
one or two
interview to Apple Music's Zane Lowe.
Talk
about everything about
the record,
Arcade Fire's new album, and we've given some props to Zane Lowe. We're not like Apple Music heads here, but like we've given props.
He's honestly very good. You know me, I am a critic when it comes to reviewers because I'm very picky. He's actually a fantastic reviewer. He got Tom York to give him a high five, so you know I'm jealous beyond measures. But anyways,
stretch
more
quotes.
Or less, it's just, right. But more or less. Yeah, just because he has a family and he cannot tour and everything when he has three young kids and whatnot, and he wanted to do it but he just wasn't able to do it. Wynn Butler says that Arcade Fire is really like his family and everything, and he kind of sees it in that way, and it has grown to be that, and they're able, him and his wife and their children are able to travel along for most of part of it, so he's still able to raise his family like he wants to. But he says Wynn Butler says it that he's honestly like he's kind of proud of his brother for doing his own thing, and that he's, you know, sees, you know what, he wants to raise his family, he wants to do everything like that, and he completely understands it. So it's not like any bad situation or whatnot, which is good to see. So maybe he'll be in theme future things here or there. Maybe he says that they left the door open for future stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But totally,
there's no bad blood between the brothers.
No.
Which is good because there's the Gallagher situation. But
very true.
No, please. I think another thing that was. Again, we have Audio Face, perhaps disproportionately compared to other music entities, have given Wynn Butler a lot of shit, having given him the inaugural Noted Little Bitch Award. But
the award was basically made for him, and Ed Sheeran. Yeah,
the award was created for the fact that Wynn Butler and Ed Sheeran were completely popular, like straight white dudes who quit Twitter over the smallest amount of criticism. But I do think that Wynn Butler shows a lot of like older brother like wisdom here in saying that, like, listen, I think he's sort of, I mean, this may be true, this may be not, this could also be like older brother self-importance here, but he's saying like, look, Will sort of followed me into the band because he was sort of like, okay, this is a thing we're doing, this could be like a really cool thing. But Wynn Butler acknowledges that his brother Will has always had his own life and has always had sort of things that he goes with. And that's what he seems to be alluding to, like very much like you said, Sean, about his family not being able to tour the same way Wynn has sort of been able to figure it out with his family and all the age groups, which is not necessarily to say like Wynn's a better or worse musician or anything like that. But when you are balancing being a popular musician or part of a very popular band and you're touring all the time at a time in the music industry where you need to tour to basically make all of your revenue as a band. Mm-hmm. And balancing that with just the very basic, like being a good father to your children and being a good family guy and a person, like That's something that a lot of people struggle with very much in the public eye, especially musicians. Shout out Kanye West. But it seems to be very good that, unlike Ye, who makes a very big ass of himself publicly in these things, Will Butler seems to be doing the right thing by his family. So, gotta love that. And speaking of, you know, decently family. Right things by the world, the climate, whatever, Billie Eilish, very popular pop musician, has unveiled Overheated, which, according to Consequence of Sound's Brian Kress, is a six-day summit in London that will align with existing UK tour dates on her oncoming tour. So Billie Eilish, along with her brother Phineas, have been really involved in environmental justice, climate justice, and a lot of other political things, just notwithstanding. They've really held the mantle of not just being pop musicians, but also using their pop stardom to raise awareness to issues that people in their generation already kind of care about, but definitely want and need a vehicle to make sure they're constantly bringing that to the public attention in front. And so as part of this event, it's going to have introductory remarks by Eilish and Phineas on June 10th. A special keynote speaker to be announced. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if it was like Greta Thunberg or something like that. But yeah. There'll be a screening of the documentary Overheated, which is the name of the sort of like climate summit music festival type deal, where it'll also kind of show the impacts of climate change as the title sort of intends. You'll also feature English fashion designer Dame Vivienne, Emily Eves, and Norwegian Grammy winner Girl in Red, who will also be presenting shows and different events throughout the whole thing. And it's basically just going to, it's really interesting because it's using Billie Eilish's like superstar celebrity pop star platform to bring attention to climate change, which I know from my own political work and ongoing Dan from the Internet project is very hard to get people to pay attention to. Like, everyone knows climate change is an issue and everyone feels it, especially in the summer, like, god damn, it's hot. Like, they have those reactions, but like, I think even over the past 10 years, has come with a lot of things in politics, people just become numb to the idea of what can be done to change anything about it. And so I'm glad that these artists are, and we have to make sure to not expect like celebrities and musicians to have all the answers, but it's good that these artists are pushing the issue and keeping it in the forefront of attention. Yeah, they're keeping it in so that we keep paying attention to it. It's in the forefront of our minds, even when we're consuming this like otherwise generally awesome music festival. I've now seen Billie Eilish live, pretty great. And so it's good that you have artists like this who are also using their platforms to bring attention to otherwise really hard to talk about political topics.
Oops. Yep. Moving on.
Yes, we go to our last album, Dan Indulgence. We have Let It Be Blue by Chuck Chuck Chuck, or 3! Or as notated on this podcast, Surprise Pikachu Face by Sean. It's 11 songs, 39 minutes almost. And Chuck 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 has been a really sleeper band. They're one of my favorite electronic alternative groups. They're very much in the vein of LCD Sound System and having that DNA of like building on sounds, but using alternative music and recordings to create dance structured type songs and beats and instrumentals. They had a couple of hits here and there. I think their album Wallop was really just them at their best, at their most concise. Also doing a similar thing as we talked to with Arcade Fire, a band we reviewed recently, where they're able to put movements into songs and yet put that in a very mainstream, presentable way. They did that very well with Wallop. This album is very different from what they've done in the past. It's a little bit slower. Yeah, it's a little bit slower down, which are some things that have been alluded to in these songs that have been released since Wallop. It's a little bit more international focused. You have a lot of like Latin artists who are participating in here and adding their little bit of flair to make the song sound a little bit different in here. And this is definitely one of those challenging for me, not as a, like a music reviewer, but also like a fan of a band kind of things, because I didn't like this album, maybe my first listen, maybe even like my second listen to a lot of it, there's still things that I just straight skip through and I don't like. But I do, even on my second and third listen, not just liking this band from the jump, appreciate that they did a pivot, something that is very different sounding for them, that overall in an album doesn't waste your time, comes across pretty complete and pretty like well thought out. Even if the execution isn't perfect in every single place, I think that they, like, there's thought into this. This isn't like one of those careless projects that we see from a lot of musicians out there.
Yes, it's very, very different from a lot of the work that, and a lot of the other projects that Chick 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 have done. Wallop is a fantastic record. I do like it a lot. I call it the Mochi album because it's just eyeballs of a cat. And Chuck, you know, you have Thriller, which came out, you know, almost 10 years ago now, and a few other records that are pretty good from them. And with Let It Be Blue, it is definitely a pivot. It's very much more of like really going into the dance part of their discography, really diving into electronica of it. Even though, you know, naturally they do dive into that a lot, but now like this whole record is mainly that. But it's interesting because some of it is great and some of it is interesting to say. Where like I don't know how I feel about it yet. Some of this stuff really, really like. Example, opening two tracks, No More People, A Little Bit More, I like a lot. Chill out just a little bit, have out just a little bit, no doubt just a little bit, leak out just a little bit more, radio just a little bit, outgrow just a little bit, say no just a little bit, let go just a little bit more. Like, they're upbeat, yeah, like they're fast, they're fun, a little bit more. Such a good fun track. Like, I want to put this in some of my mixes and stuff. Storm Around the World is okay. It's like kind of has really weird breaks and stuff, especially like towards the end. It just feels a little off-putting on that.
I will say really fast about Storm Around the World, there have been certain tracks by Chuck 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 that are really good, like relationship emotional ones, like One Girl, One Boy, or Dancing is the Best Revenge. That Storming Around the World is like in the same vein as those, which is like, it's good that a band can like redo the kind of song they do best and not make it sound like a carbon copy. Like a number of my other bands that I do also like, is like personal favorites, do and fail at. I'm looking at you, Danny Warhols. Stop recreating the same song with the same chord progressions.
Very true. But a lot of like the Latin stuff that they have in here, actually, I think is pretty cool. I think it's good. It's interesting, and it's pulls influences from, you know, European house, even Latin house, garage influences, some even like old school UK dubstep, which, you know, I'm all here for. I just was not expecting that going into a Chuck Chuck record. Some of it is fantastic. Some of it is interesting. Like, Un Puente is fantastic. I really, really like that track. Here's what I need to know. I don't really like that track that much. So, and that's like, that's what I get with this record, where some things are really good, some things just aren't sticking with it. Like Panama Canal, really good track. I like it. It's fun.
It's interesting. So like, there are certain lyrical repetitions that like, I get it. Part of music creation is like, how do you use lyrical repetitions to create earworms or songs that like stick in people's head? And
you can do it from Caribou, something that I could like off the top of my head, like literally says that 1,000 times, but it makes sense in the way it's made. Yeah.
And like the way that Panamanamana canal, the way they kind of repeat it can be kind of catchy. Yeah. To me, it was just like cheese grating against the ears. Same with It's Gray, parentheses, It's Gray. That song, I literally, as a fan, have to hard skip it. Like, I only listened to it once for the sake of reviewing it for this podcast. But otherwise, it's not going to be one of those songs that grows on me. I'm just going to not like it.
It's Gray.
What?
It's Gray. It's great.
It's literally giving me like the same headache that the background noise from my high profile electric vehicle also makes. That also gives me a headache. But
I'm gonna play that song for you now all the time. Because I don't like it either. It's just like, it's very off-putting in the way it's made. It's annoying. It's not a good track.
Yeah. But then you have songs featuring Maya Pace, which like Panama Canal is also, but also Man on the Moon, which was one of the single tracks that was released from it. That I think is like the perfect example of this is Chuck 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 at their best, but this is also Chuck 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 reinventing their sound a little bit, being a little bit smoother, a little bit jazzier, a little bit funkier, but still keeping that like four-step beat, Euro-influenced, like alternative rock dance-focused style that they have. It's very unique. It's very cool. It's stuff that like, again, not as a music reviewer, but like if I wasn't doing this podcast and I was just like a regular person who was just mostly prioritizing the shit I liked, I would just, and I do, just put on Chuck 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 for fun. So this is why I like had to include them on the rundown somewhere this year for sure. But
Man on the Moon, do you know where that song's from?
No.
Hold on, see if you know.
Learn me up real quick.
I'm so sad. It's from REM.
Really?
REM and Man on the Moon. Yeah, it's on my favorite REM record. Yeah. Are we losing touch? If you believe they put a man on the moon, man on the moon. If you believe there's nothing up his sleeve, nothing is there's nothing to see, nothing to do. Yeah, it was interesting when I heard that. It's a really cool like
cover
way of doing it, but then adding up their own stuff with it too. But it's REM. But it's really cool, like interesting dance version of it and whatnot. So, but I will allow it. So, as a really big REM fan, I will allow it.
God bless. If it has that blessing, I'll definitely recommend check. And yeah, screw it. I'll throw in that reference, the REM song as well, in the podcast version.
Oh yeah, so you definitely should. That might be a music recommendations I need to have. I don't think I've ever really talked about REM on here. I just realized.
Neither
that.
Have we.
Holy shit!
Considering the like another version of the unofficial brand of the podcast, The World is Terrible but the Music is Great, could also be REM's It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine. overall Chuck 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 still one of my favorite sort of like sleeper random bands that I was like put on when I am alone and like just want to have like a damn good time. And this is in a typical like audioface way, this challenges me as a fan of an artist to just like hear this band out and let them experiment with their different things. Definitely not all of these things I like, but a lot of these things I do, and I like that they are branching out and doing different things. The next albums or the next project, if they happen, because they've been a pretty old band, they've been around for like 15 years now at this point. Maybe more Walb influence, maybe more Let It Be Blue influence, maybe a little bit different, but I definitely love bands that keep me guessing. So, arbitrary scale.
John Lewis class replenishment oilers, because the U.S. Navy likes to name certain class destroyers over fucking liberals, so here we are. God, who don't want this to
this
be?
This is my Sojourner Truth.
Sojourner Truth, yeah, that's a good this one. Is this is my this is my Lucy West. Stone.
for the Zoomers in the audience who were robbed of like a decent educational system, who is Lucy Stone?
Oh, Lucy Stone. She was a like women's rights activist in the mid 1800s, I would say.
Yeah, suffragette.
She was like abolition. She did abolitionist and, you know, overall freedom fighter.
Yeah, yo, flip this. In 1847, Stone became the first woman from Massachusetts to earn a college degree.
Holy shit, that's wild. That I did not know.
America goes so hard in the paint.
I love it. Like, you want to have a college degree? Are you a woman?
Literally 80 years later, for America to go, yeah, sure, women can read. Why not?
The woman drive? Oh, no.
Oh, God.
You need to get a college degree? Yeah. Can you vote? No.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still flipped by Sam Cedar's comment that, like, speaking of Massachusetts, his mom, he's a political commentator. His mom. Check out the Majority Report. My previous Power Report guest, Emma Vigeland, is the co-host of that show. It's a really solid show. Check it out on YouTube.
Emma and I are mortal enemies right now because the New York Rangers and Pittsburgh Penguins are playing against each other in the playoffs, and I saw her getting so butthurt when the Penguins beat them last night, and I was like, I don't know how I feel about this because this is hilarious, but I respect Emma a lot. And Majority Report's probably my favorite political thing out there. One of my favorite.
Definitely. But that being said, like the host of it, Sam Cedar, who was he's a Gen Xer. We love to call him a boomer. Yeah. He's a Gen Xer. He's like in his mid-50s. And his mom in Massachusetts was not allowed to have a credit card because she was Mrs. Sam Cedar, so like Sam's dad, and so like had to apply for the credit card with her husband's approval. Right? So, like, that's just the 1960s. That's just the 1970s. Yep. That's just 50 years ago. That's our parents' lifetimes, more or less, right? So, I don't know how we got onto that tangent about, like, women not having rights, but maybe that's a relevant thing.
Our arbitrary scale.
Yeah. Quick hits. So,
oh, Jesus Christ, I forgot about this.
Yeah, so this has nothing to do with music, and this is just like a number of landmines waiting to happen, so I would normally avoid the story, but it kind of has something to do with music, so I can jump right in. Dave Chappelle was performing one of the keynote performances at Netflix's Netflix is a Joke Music Festival. I attended one of the comedy shows. This is kind of a fun time. Again, if you pick a comedian you like and you go to that, it's a fun time. Otherwise, it's a festival of drunk adults who are questionable opinions about life, so it's whatever. But anyways, Dave Chappelle was performing at the Hollywood Bowl for the Netflix is a Joke Music Festival, and he was almost assaulted on stage by a man who jumped on. His name was Isaiah Arias Lee, reading from this article according to The Fader, which has all the information about it. And this man jumped onto the stage and had apparently it was a knife disguised as like a gun, essentially, something like that, and tried to assault Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle's security was on the scene and routinely, to repeat a term used on social media, pretzeled the guy. Like, dude was on a stretcher with like his arm bending in like three different directions arms do not bend in. So
rip.
black security once again undefeated. But it turns out that there was like Lee had recorded and released rap music on SoundCloud under the username noname_trapper and released a song called Dave Chappelle, without the E at the end, so it's misspelled, in 2020. And it has a very ominous lyric about referencing, you know, this rapper walking straight into the bowl.
Walking straight into the bowl. You know, my nigga, it's me. Huh.
Okay.
Life at you niggas a joke.
Okay.
Life at you niggas a joke. Okay. My nigga big bees be bold. Your niggas is fish poke. Life at you niggas a joke. Life at you niggas a joke. My nigga big bees be bold. I'm laughing rolling in the boat.
And of course, it was the Hollywood Bowl where this thing happened. And so there was going to be a Dave Chappelle show that was going to be at the Hollywood Bowl that was scheduled for May of 2020. It was naturally canceled because of the pandemic. It ended up happening for the Netflix is a Joke Festival. So this is definitely a premeditated thing. If I were... oh, I'm dancing in trouble here. If I were this guy's lawyer, I would be really pissed about this fact that this SoundCloud song exists, because this does not make the case easier at all.
Hit him with the Hennessy.
And yeah, he also has the video of, has the photo of him standing on top of an LAPD squad police interceptor, one of the Explorer ones. So like, just great all around. Because Lee's sister, Shawnee, declined to comment when being reached by the Washington Post, saying, quote, "At this point, we're just trying to find a lawyer for my brother." Dude, God bless.
Oh, good freaking luck.
All I'll say is there is definitely a lawyer out there that'll take that case, but
yeah.
just Bravo TV, watch what happens on that. But, and the last thing I'll say on this is, apparently there was a bunch of speculation because, you know, Dave Chappelle's bullshit tangent against transgender people became an obvious like target of this. Dave Chappelle started making anti-trans jokes immediately after this thing happened, even though this is nothing what this guy was talking about. Obviously the best joke from this came after Chris Rock was apparently at Dave Chappelle's thing and came on stage and was like, "Yo, was that Will Smith?" And I think that's like his first official like public joke about the entire like Desvisionfela that happened at the Oscars award show with Will Smith and Chris Rock, that incident. But no, apparently Dave Chappelle then talked to the guy, and apparently he had some issues with gentrification that he wanted to bring up with Dave Chappelle. Again, mentally ill people are usually not the best people to bring up political situations with these different things. And fucking don't come after me. I've done so much advocacy work on mental illness and getting that represented in politics, so you can just suck it. This is just not the hill I'm going to die on with, like, mental illness and, like, representing yourself politically. Anyways, we always like to end audio face on a fun note. And what's a more fun note than Ye not paying his taxes?
Oh, beautiful. Love it.
This is such a pattern, because, like, Ye didn't pay the Sunday service people. He didn't pay he's not paid a number of different people who have like helped him with his musical projects as of late, especially. And now it looks like he's being sued by a pastor, Bishop David Paul Moton, who is seeking damages over the Donda song "Come to Life" because it apparently includes an uncleared sample Rooney.
Happens to the best of us.
Yeah, you are a grown-ass man. In music especially. Clear your damn samples, dog. You have the money.
It's not that hard.
Yeah. Admittedly, and probably for the best, Wes has been pretty quiet since dropping out of Coachella earlier this year, or earlier this month. He was supposed to perform, earlier last month in April at the time of recording this. He was supposed to perform Coachella on the Sunday of both weekends. He then canceled out the weekend. The Swedish House Mafia replaced him. Coachella was about to short the weekend after out of his money. The weekend ran that shit and got his money back, and hopefully in dividends, and all to play a completely lackluster performance. But overall, Moton is seeking damages not only from West, but also from Donda Distributors, UMG Recordings, Def Jam Recordings, and Good Music, because presumably all of these record labels have profited from this uncleared song. So, according to the court documents, out of the 5-minute, 10-second song, approximately 1 minute and 10 seconds of the sound is sampled directly from the plaintiff's sermon. That's like almost a fourth of the song, definitely like a fifth of the song.
Yep.
That's not a good look. As we say in the hood, not a good look.
Play for the jury.
Yeah. So, listen, Kanye's next 2 years are going to involve a lot of court. That's all I'm going to say. Between the divorce, between all these clearances, between that one guy who apparently he punched in downtown LA a couple months ago.
I forgot about that.
Like,
totally forgot about that.
Dude better hire the Migos lawyers. He's going to be stuck for a minute. Am I right?
Cardi B lawyers.
Right. friends of the show. Anyways, this has been Audio Face. Thank you very much for joining us on this podcasting experience. Like we said, next couple weeks are going to be very interesting. Next week will definitely be off, even though it's like the biggest week of Audio Face since we started the podcast. But make sure you're subscribed to youtube.com/audioface pod because Sean's going to have a first listen review of The Smile. I'm going to have a first listen review of whatever Kendrick Lamar releases, whether it's both the double albums or half of the double album. We report, you decide. And then once we come together, also, I guess, rock, paper, scissors for whoever does the Black Keys one. And then we'll come together, we'll do our full review of it the week afterwards. That'll come out on YouTube and on podcast form, which y'all can check out. Sean can be found at SW Suarez on Twitter and Instagram. I can be found at Dan from the Web on Twitter and Twitch, at Dan from the Internet on Instagram and TikTok. As I said, the entire show can be found on Audioface Pod on Twitter and Instagram, youtube.com/audiofacepod, audioface.show for all the podcast links and everything else you can find about it. And we will see you probably in 2 weeks with the 5-year anniversary episode of Audioface and a whole lot of music to review.
Yeah.
Boy, howdy. Cheers. Happy birthday, Sean. And we'll see you all next week. In 2 weeks, sorry. Cheers.
Bye. All
right,
real
quick. And there was something I was supposed to ask you about, right? Yeah.
Okay, so speaking of Navy.
In the Navy.
So, pilot things. When there's emergency frequency, 121.5, which you can monitor and wave, right? You can monitor it just to hear, like, kind of what's going on, but basically it's like the because no one really uses it unless there's an actual emergency. There's been problems when literally like ATC is like, please get off of 121.5 because you guys are just literally talking random shit. It's basically pilot Discord server. Like, it's a thing and it's fucking hilarious. Also, we call it guard, like you're on guard because there's a guarded frequency. So if anyone is like randomly talks or is on the wrong frequency, hey, you're on guard. Like, all right, cool, switch frequencies. I've done this myself. I have done radio calls and forgot to change frequencies, and I've literally did that Friday. But that's a story for another day. But anyways, so this Navy
the
pilot...
things that have been recorded of Sean saying on the FAA's airwaves could potentially be legal pitfalls for Syndicate 23 in the future, but that's why we're caked up. That's fine.
That's why we're caked up.
Continue.
So he's like a captain of, I don't know, some Delta flight or something like that. And he's on guard frequency, right? So he's on the emergency frequency and he accidentally turns on his mic because you have a little button to turn on your mic to talk, push to talk, basically. And when he's doing his little spiel, he accidentally turns on his mic for the frequency and just starts talking. And he goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. We will be in San Jose here shortly, about like maybe 2 hours. We're going to start a descend now." Meanwhile, people are butting in, like they're trying to like click in, tell him, they're tapping their mics and saying, "Oh my God, like, hey, you're on guard, shut up." And then he's just going on about his, you know, passenger briefing on the way there. He's like, "But you are in safe hands. I was a former Navy fighter pilot, do 250 aircraft carrier landings, so you guys will be in great hands for it. Just wear your seatbelts for now, blah, blah, blah. We'll be there in about like hour and a half or so. You are in good hands." He releases the thing, and it's just all hell breaks loose. You hear 1,000 different pilots saying, you're on guard. And then everyone just goes, "Go Navy. Yeah, Navy. Navy's best. Yeah, Navy." And then one, my favorite one, though, is one dude who goes, "No one is that fucking stupid to do that." He's like, "That can't be real. That's not, there's no way." And
I'm honestly surprised nothing worse was said.
And then the rest of it was just everyone making fun of him for being a Navy pilot. Like, it was just like 2 minutes of just fucking an ass whooping of pilots just all saying Navy. Absolutely beautiful.
I love the like American unspoken sort of like shit talking. I mean, it's also like a British thing too. There's just like shit talking of the Navy.
Always.
Yeah, just shit talking.
The Marines are crayon eaters, and the Navy's all gay. There you go. So settled it for you right there.
It's in these like outdated American forms of like 100% understanding of the shit. Yeah.
It was so funny though. Just don't be on guard frequency. More of the story.
Make sure your messages are set to private. Do not publicly DM.
And the one That's thing that we do talk about though is always like if we can have conversations in the cockpit, but always assume that someone can hear you.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. That's kind of like the hot mic scenario with live TV, especially whenever you're doing live TVs and live streams, just like even when the mic is cold, assume it's hot.
Yeah. I've gotten a stuck mic before, so like it was stuck for a good like 90 seconds to 2 minutes. I was just trying to unstick the mic, so it was clicked in. So it happens. So
We're going to be doing a lot more live streaming with Syndicate 23, especially PowerPort, in the next coming months. So that was your warning.
I'm used to it. Anyways, now.
Okay. I'm going to export and render all of this.
I'm eating my lemon cake.
God bless. Happy birthday again. Cheers.
Thanks, sir. Bye.